Chapter 3. Some means, or even merely reduced, a lot of these rifles and cartridges could be taken off quietly at night by certain Spanish fishing boats. In fact, salved for the Carlists, after all. He thought it could be done. I said with professional gravity, that given a few perfectly quiet nights rare on that coast, it could certainly be done. Mr. Mills was not afraid of the elements. It was the highly inconvenient zeal of the French custom house people that had to be dealt with in some way. Heavens! I cried, astonished. Who can bribe the French customs? This isn't a South American republic. Is it a republic? He murmured, very absorbed in smoking his wooden pipe. Well, isn't it? He murmured again, oh, so little. At this I laughed, and a faintly humorous expression passed over Mill's face. No. Bribes were out of the question, he admitted. But there were many legitimist sympathies in Paris. A proper person could set them in motion, and a mere hint from high quarters to the officials on the spot, not to worry over much about that wreck. What was most amusing was the cool, reasonable tone of this amazing project. Mr. Blunt sat by very detached, his eyes roamed here and there all over the café, and it was while looking upward at the pink foot of a fleshy, and very much foreshortened goddess of some sort depicted on the ceiling in an enormous composition in the Italian style, that he let fall casually the words, "She will manage it for you quite easily." Every Carlist agent in Bayonne assured me of that, said Mr. Mills. Would have gone straight to Paris only I was told she had fled here for a rest, tired, discontented. Not a very encouraging report. These flights are well known, muttered Mr. Blunt. Who shall see her all right? Yes. They told me that you. I broke in. Who mean to say that you expect a woman to arrange that sort of thing for you? A trifle, for her, Mr. Blunt remarked indifferently. That sort of thing women are best. They have less scruples. More audacity, interjected Mr. Mills almost in a whisper. Mr. Blunt kept quiet for a moment then. You see, he addressed me in a most refined tone, a mere man may suddenly find himself being kicked down the stairs. I don't know why I should have felt shocked by that statement. It could not be because it was untrue. The other did not give me time to offer any remark. He inquired with extreme politeness, what did I know of South American republics? I confessed that I knew very little of them. Wandering about the Gulf of Mexico I had a look in here and there, and amongst others I had a few days in Haiti which was of course unique, being a Negro republic. On this Captain Blunt began to talk of Negroes at large. He talked of them with knowledge, intelligence, and a sort of contemptuous affection. He generalized, he particularized about the blacks, he told anecdotes. I was interested, a little incredulous, and considerably surprised. What could this man with such a Bolivarian exterior, that he looked positively like an exile in a provincial town, and with his drawing room manner, what could he know of Negroes? Mills, sitting silent with his air of watchful intelligence, seemed to read my thoughts, waved his pipe slightly and explained. He captain is from South Carolina. Oh, I murmured, and then after the slightest of pauses I heard the second of Mr. J.K. Blunt's declarations. Yes, he said. Jesus American, Catholic a gentle homme, in a tone contrasting so strongly with the smile, which, as it were, underlined the uttered words, that I was at a loss, whether to return the smile in kind, or acknowledge the words with a grave little bow. Of course I did neither, and there fell on us an odd equivocal silence. It marked our final abandonment of the French language. I was the one to speak first, proposing that my companions should sup with me, not across the way, which would be riotous with more than one fernal supper, but in another much more select establishment in a side street away from the Canebière. It flattered my vanity a little to be able to say that I had a corner table always reserved in the Salon des Pommiers, otherwise Salon Blanc, where the atmosphere was legitimist and extremely decorous besides even in carnival time. 9/10 of the people there, I said, would be of your political opinions, if that's an inducement. Come along. Let's be festive, I encouraged them. I didn't feel particularly festive. What I wanted was to remain in my company and break an inexplicable feeling of constraint of which I was aware. Mills looked at me steadily with a faint, kind smile. No, said Blunt. Why should we go there? They will be only turning us out in the small hours to go home and face insomnia. Can you imagine anything more disgusting? He was smiling all the time, but his deep-set eyes did not lend themselves to the expression of whimsical politeness which he tried to achieve. He had another suggestion to offer. Why shouldn't we adjourn to his rooms? He had there materials for a dish of his own invention for which he was famous all along the line of the Royal Cavalry outposts, and he would cook it for us. There were also a few bottles of some white wine, quite possible, which we could drink out of Venetian cut glass goblets. A bivouac feast, in fact. And he wouldn't turn us out in the small hours. Not he. He couldn't sleep. Need I say I was fascinated by the idea? Well, yes. But somehow I hesitated and looked towards Mills, so much my senior. He got up without a word. This was decisive. For no obscure premonition, and of something indefinite at that, could stand against the example of his tranquil personality. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.